The BBC presents My Music. A radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Thank you very much. And hello again. Here in our customary My Music studio, which happens to be the Commonwealth Institute in London, the cast remains unchanged. Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden in competition against John Amis and Frank Muir. A little identification, as usual, to start things off. Ian Wallace, title and composer, please. And I thought that went round in a rather capricious sort of way. What was it called?
Don't give him a hint.
No, I won't give him a hint. No, I wouldn't do that.
Well, thank goodness you did give me a hint, because otherwise... But apart from being one of those bits of music that is extremely familiar, you got a laugh from the audience. This is almost like 20 questions. You got a laugh from the audience on the word capricious, I noticed. Yes. So it's obviously something capricious is in the title.
Yes.
Oh, well, I got it, actually, from that hint, because he also said round.
Yes.
And oh, tell him. All in Italian.
Rondo.
Yes.
E capriccioso.
Mm. Yes, well, without the A. Rondo capriccioso. Capriccio, it's from the introduction and Rondo capriccioso. Bye for your second mark.
Oh, that he didn't give it.
I think we've done very well. I think we'll rest on that.
All right. Yes. You stick at that. One mark out of two. I'll give you the answer, the composer's name, in the immortal words of Ogden Nash. If you remember, Camille Saint-Saëns was racked with pains when people addressed him as Saint Saëns. He held the human race to blame because they could not pronounce his name. Saint-Saëns.
Well, I'm afraid as far as he's concerned, softly awakes my heart and danse macabre is my dead string.
Yes. One out of two. Dennis, all I want from you for one of your marks, first of all, is the missing word.
Kalamazoo.
Yes, there's one mark. Kalamazoo. And for your second mark, which state is it in?
That's the end. I'll make my bid for that freckle-faced kid. I'm hurrying to... Michigan.
I'm going to Michigan to see the sweetest gal in Kalamazoo. There's your second mark. Good. John Amis, title and composer, please, of this. And if the first few seconds should baffle you, the composer's clear fingerprint is there from the 14th second onwards. I'll warrant.
Yes, I think it's Elgar.
Yes, and the composition?
I don't know, it's probably one of those slomp and perkumstances. Herc and slomp and perkumstances.
No, it's from the Yond of Woof.
Oh, it's the Yond of Woof, is it?
The Yond of Woof, yes, I can't do it. It's the overture from the Wand of Youth Suite, number one. One mark out of two for you. Frank, back to another example of Miller music, Glenn Miller. Who are the singers in this period piece?
They get a load of those guys high in the skies, winging to victory.
Up and at 'em in the fight for people like you and me.
They get a load of those gobs doing their jobs, keeping the sea lanes free.
Just to make the future bright for people like you and me.
Not
Walter Midgley.
No, it was last week.
I...
You don't know them, do you?
Shoot me and...
Well, Dennis,
me
you can spy the names, can't you? Tex.
Well, there's more. Yeah, Tex Beneke and Marion Hutton. Marion, I think the Modern Heirs also sing on that later
yes.
on as well.
Yes, that's right. But they were the ones we heard. Yeah. Tex Beneke and Marion Hutton from the soundtrack of Orchestra Wives.
It was very interesting, though, Stephen. Thank you for letting us hear it.
Well, there you go. As we say where I come from, Sarky.
It's wonderful that we all sat here during the war, or just before the war, this was, just the beginning of the war, and heard, listened to lyrics like, look at those gobs doing their jobs. Awful, really.
Yeah. Let's go on to the next round. Turn to operatic matters. Ian Wallace, have you ever had the occasion to use the services of a souffleur?
Yes.
You have.
In a word.
A necessary thing, yes. What do they do?
Yeah, cleared it up nicely, didn't it? it's the person who hisses the words at you, in other words, the prompter.
Yes, in a French course, or German opera house.
But of course, or Italian. Where yes. they call him a suggeritore.
That's right, maestro, maestro suggeritore.
And, of course, the thing that is different between the opera house and the theatre is that, of course, the operatic prompter gives you the prompt whether you need it or not. It doesn't have to develop that nasty pause that happens in the theatre. It's a very, very skilled thing to do. I've heard singers speak rather disparagingly sometimes about prompters, saying they were only fair-weather prompters. They were very good, provided nothing went wrong. I believe there was a famous lady prompter many, many years ago in one of the middle European opera houses who was marvellous, giving the lines, but as soon as anything went amiss, all she would do was just to put her hands up to her forehead and say, wrong, wrong!
Interesting, a mark to Ian, so much for prompters. Dennis, what can you tell me about May Knight?
May Knight? It's about time her name is brought out in public, because it's her sister who gets all the attention generally, who is June Knight, who appears in thousands of songs. June Knight, the moonlight, and you, and so on.
Yes.
But nobody's ever written a song starring May Knight at all, and I think what I can tell you about her is that she's been there in the background ironing June Knight's dresses and so on. And we're paying a well-deserved tribute to her tonight. Yes. Because if it wasn't for these little people behind the scenes... I always want to say that when people get these awards on the radio and they, on the television, and they always come forward and they say, well, I really don't know what to say. I always want to say, well, let the loser go up there because he'll know what to
say. Very true. I have to tell you that May Knight is a three-act opera by Rimsky-Korsakov based on a story by Gogol, which I thought you might possibly know with your literary connections. John Amis, what can you tell me about Monsieur Taupe? T-A-U-P-E, Monsieur Taupe.
I think he's a character in an opera by Richard Strauss.
Yes, what does he do? What's his function?
He's a wigger.
A what, sir?
Isn't he a wigger?
No, not according to my information.
A barber?
No, he's a souffleur. He's a prompter.
Souffleur.
He's a prompter who appears in Strauss's... Did you name the opera?
Capriccio.
Yes, also Intermezzo, yes. Half a mark, I think, because you've got Strauss and so on, but not the job. Frank, what can you tell me about Love in a Village?
Well, it's no worse off than Love in a Village. It's the same thing.
Prickly sometimes.
Love in the Village is by Isaac Bickerstaff.
Oh, you know.
Who then...
My job, I wasn't ready for this at all.
He's an interesting character because he's a very successful writer of the 18th century. who then, owing to some crime unspecified, had to leave the country. And I've always tried to find out what it was.
Oh, yes.
It was a heinous crime that made him leave. It was a... Lovin Village was one, I think, of those ballad operas which started with Gay's...
Beggar's Opera.
Beggar's Opera. And petered out. Actually, soon after Bickerstaff, which is terribly unfortunate, isn't it? Because the marvellous idea of doing a play, because they weren't operas at all, they were plays, but the actors were required to sing some rather satirical lyrics to well-known airs, which was a marvellous theatrical form, which was totally 18th century.
Well, Love in a Village, as Frank said, a ballad opera in three acts composed and compiled, anyway, by Thomas Arne and Bickerstaff, 1762. And, there was a new edition of it at Aldborough in 1952. Right, let's move on to the next round. One of the great triumphs of British music-making is the amateur choir, singing just for the love of singing and often achieving a very high standard. Like, for example, the Reading Phoenix Choir. The questions in this round all concern performances by that choir, beginning with a question for Ian. Ian Wallace, who composed this? Born in London, like yourself, but also, like you, orientated towards Scotland. You know him, he wrote a Hebridean symphony, a pibroch for cello and harp, and that lovely song. Who was he?
Yes, I was listening to that lovely performance, too. I was, my mind was going to another choir, a rather older choir, the Glasgow Orpheus. Yes. Because that is a song that was famous in their repertoire called Sea Sorrow. Mm-hmm. And the Englishman was Granville Bantock.
Sir, in fact.
Sir Granville Bantock, who was a great friend of Hugh Robertson. And there's a story about one time when Hugh Robertson went to stay with Granville Bantock. And he arrived at Bantock's house to find Bantock standing on the doorstep, wearing a kilt, which he'd obviously hired from somewhere, a pair of white tennis shoes, and curious socks that were held up with tartan suspenders. And everywhere in the house that Bantock had been able to find something tartan, there were tartan ribbons to trip him up as he got to the top of the staircase. And afterwards, Bantock had said the only part of the joke that he was deeply regretting he'd missed was that he wasn't able to find a silk hat to wear with the kilt to greet him.
Nice man. Sir Granville Bantock. That was his Sea Sorrow, as you said, that we heard. Mark to Ian. Dennis, this is called the Riddle Song. While it's on, see if you can think up a musical riddle. Remember one, or even, I don't know, even make one up. Can you?
No.
Try. A bit of singing. Any luck, Dennis, with your riddle?
What do you call a girl who thinks about nothing but classical music?
I don't know. What do you call a girl who thinks about nothing but classical music?
A symphomaniac.
Oh. Some of our 100-year-old listeners will remember a riddle from the old music hall days. Do you remember, why was Haydn Coffin? The answer, because he gave his vest to Tilly.
Two marks to Steve Rest.
Why not? John, back to our choir again. Title, please, and composer of this lament. That, folks, was not the choir, but the John Elliott. Yeah. It is...
It's by Monte Verdi.
That's right, both of them.
Joe yes. Greenberg.
Mm. Yes, and it is, in fact...
Lamento di yes. Ariadne.
That's right, all that survives of the opera Ariadne by Monteverdi. Mark, to you. Frank, a Dutch composer called Svelink wrote this five-part motet almost 400 years ago. Can you tell us, when it's over, how the word motet came into existence?
It's a very small motel. You know, it's one bedroom and a bicycle shed. A single bed. Am I warm?
Oh, that would do very nicely, I think, for one mark, actually. The answer is so simple one somehow wouldn't think of it. Motet is the old French, the diminutive of mot, M-O-T, meaning a word.
It would be so moet.
A little word. Mot, as it were. Anyway.
Uncut.
So Mark to you, and so much for the music of the Reading Phoenix Choir, most of whom I think are with us in the audience. Let's make them take a bow. Reading Phoenix Choir, where are you? Come on. Where are you? Stand up.
Well, very nice to see them rising from the ashes of the programme.
Very good.
I'm delighted that they're here, because I had the great pleasure and privilege of singing a concert with them very recently. And, you know, they've all stood up so nicely, but I think that we ought to have a special stand-up for their conductor, Norman
yes.
Morris.
Here, here. Norman.
Come on, Norman.
I don't know if you noticed, Ian, Norman has an endearing habit, just before he begins to conduct the choir, of rubbing his hands together like this, much to say, let's make music, and then he conducts. It's a lovely moment.
Nerves.
On to the next round. There are various sets of initials that are well known in the world of music. At least I think they're well known. We'll find out if they are. Ian Wallace, what does WNO stand for?
W? Opera?
Yes. W?
Oh, it has to be Welsh National.
That's right. The Welsh Opera. National Opera. WNO gets you a mark. That's right. Dennis, what does GSM suggest to you? GSM.
Gilbert and Sullivan Museum. Gilbert O'Sullivan Museum.
That would be gossip.
Yeah, sorry, don't just hang about, Steve, because the answer's coming
SM
as fast
the,
as hand
the clue.
Can write. Oh, yes, of
Ian's
course.
Got
the
it.
Guildhall School of Music.
Yes, thank you for a mark. John, M-I-M-I-T. M-I-M-I-T. It's not easy, but it's genuine, it's real.
Your tiny hand is frozen, so grab a cup of hot tea.
Yes? Oh, Mimi.
The ministry... is musical...
Isn't it?
Yeah. And in time. Or was it Jay?
I'll tell you what.
Yes.
As an old campaigner in Quisborough,
yes, right.
Over the
right.
years...
Okay, right, you give me the advice, right?
Am I member of the Institute?
Yes. Yes.
Right? Right,
yes, 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 that's right.
Right, take it from there.
Yes.
A member of the Institute.
Musically
inclined Terpsichorean.
Musically inclined Terpsichorean.
Well, that's very nice. It's well worth half a mark. It should be, actually, a member of the Institute of Musical Instrument Technicians.
Good.
It's a good half mark for you. Frank, how would you interpret ARCO?
Associate of the Royal.
Yes.
Without a shadow of doubt. There's no argument there. Associate of the Royal College of Ophthalmic...
and you were doing so well.
Associate of the Royal College of, I am informed, Ophthalmic Organist.
Yes. They live in a highly decorated building just by the Albert Hall.
Oh, that's yes.
Associate looks of the like Royal College of Organists.
Pardon? Looks like a piece of cake.
It does, yes. Looks like a wedding cake. That's right, yes. In this closing round, by tradition, the order is slightly changed. We have a drop of singing from Dennis, John, Frank, and then finally Ian, who takes us out with a basso baritonal flourish.
I think it's a very nice phrase to say that, yeah, a drop of singing.
A drop in singing.
Yeah, yeah, a descent of singing.
Dennis, it's you first, of course. And by the way, all the songs in this final round have something to do with dreams and dreaming. So, a song, Dennis, please, about a walking dream.
Ah, yeah, that old one. Did yes. you ever see a dream walking? Well, I did. Did you ever hear a dream talking? Well, I did. Did you ever have heaven close in your arms saying, I love you, I do? Well, the dream that was walking and the dream that was talking in the heaven in my arms was you.
Dennis, if you just leave your name and address with Norman Morris.
John said to me, only three keys.
Yes, I know. Well, that's because Steve didn't give me the first one, you see. No, I saved myself at least three keys then.
Well, there you are. Two marks to you. I'm going to give John a chord or
three
two.
Three keys and the fountain.
John, after a French dream, according to Monsieur Fauré, can we have the first seven or eight bars? After a French dream. I'll give an introduction. All right?
Let's get charmé ton image, je rêvais de bonheur, ardent mirage.
Two marks and another musical plunge coming. Frank, Jesse Matthews. Let me continue. Jesse Matthews
do, yeah.
dreamed of a lover on the ceiling of her bedroom.
Yeah.
Can you give us it, please?
He's dancing overhead on the ceiling near my bed. Just my love, high above. I try to hide in vain, underneath the counterpane. It's not fair, he's still there. I whisper, go away, my lover, it's not fair. But I'm delighted to discover he's still there. I love my ceiling more. Now it is the dancing floor. Must for my love.
Finally, Ian. Your dream, Ian, is in E-flat, I think, knowing your range, and it's of another man's wife, Mrs. Stephen Foster, and the colour of her hair. Can you manage that?
I dream dream of Jeannie with the light brown hair. Born like a zephyr on the summer air, I see her tripping where the bright streams play. Happy are the daisies that dance on her way. Many were the wild notes her merry voice would pour. Many were the blithe birds that warbled them all. Oh, I dream of Jeannie with a light brown hair, floating like a zephyr on the soft summer.
Floating like a zephyr on the radio air has been this edition of My Music, a victory by two marks for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Dennis Norton, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Schreier.